It's time for another edition of Silence Broken, the IPV talks, where we work and do our best to keep the issue of intimate partner violence awareness in the public eye. I'm Bob Perot, joined by Aaron Lee, Executive Director of Lanark County Interville House. Hello, Aaron.
Good day. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you as well. And Aaron, why don't you introduce our guest, who is our first repeat guest on the show?
Yes, I am pleased and honored to introduce Sean Kyogen, who from the Smiths Falls Police, very supportive, very active in the community, has been a guest once before, and we are happy to have him join us again today to talk with us a little bit more in a focused area around youth in our community. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
One of the things, Sean, is that IPV doesn't really have an age limit on it. And we talk about the crimes that take place. We talk about the awareness. And one thing that, excuse me, Aaron and I have spoken about before, is starting this education early. Can you tell me to start what the Smiths Falls Police Force and police in general do to try to talk about violence, among teens and intimate partner violence and sexual assault?
So I'd say across the board, it's a problem that is rampant. We know it's an epidemic in this area, and it's been labeled as such, and appropriately so. So the courts are taking it more seriously. Everybody is taking it more seriously, as are the schools, the community groups, and support systems. So for me personally, and for our police service here in Smiths Falls Police, it's great that our officers are able to be more engaged in the schools, creating those positive relationships and being faces that they get to know. It creates a comfort level prior to education. So when the education piece is thrown on top of it regarding violence, sexual assault, IPV, consent, I mean, all of those things encompassing, people are more comfortable reporting at a younger age. And I think if we were to run statistical analysis, we'll see that those fostering those relationships has proven to be very valuable because we are seeing more reporting. We are seeing more people feeling comfortable enough to come forward and make those reports, where in the past that might not have been the case. The schools, very supportive and on board because they don't want their schools to not be considered safe spaces and safe havens. So they encourage whenever we have the opportunity to come in and provide talks either to individual classes or in group settings or lectures around topics such as consent, intimate partner violence, assault, and across the board, the sharing of intimate images is a huge one that they encounter on a regular basis amongst couples at very young ages. So the education piece is key and paramount. The other partnership that works great with us to interact with the youth is Big Brothers Big Sisters and the We Are Kids program, right? So it allows us a different venue, a different comfort zone, a different environment to be getting these messages across.
I appreciate what you're saying, as I really do believe that education is key. One of the things I learned in a recent meeting with the Smiths Falls Police and the OPP w was a staggering increase in youth being involved in sexual violence. And so we've asked for police services to take a big, bit of a deeper dive into that so we can actually see what those situations are about. Are they historical sexual violence? Is it current in partnerships? But what are you seeing around some of the issues? You touched on it, but the involvement of technology, image sharing, what are you seeing in terms of the trends around that with youth?
So, in terms of trends for youth, we're seeing, in my opinion, and the brief overview that I looked at for our stats is that there is more reporting. A lot of it is historical or recent historical, as opposed to current and ongoing. And the ownership of those images that they're putting out and sharing with who they believe is their partner or somebody they love and care about at the time, that the person receiving it is not the owner of those images. It's still the person sending. And when they then in turn share it with their friend group or with somebody else, right? They don't have permission to do so. So educating on the criminal element of the behavior that they're engaging in is important because consent can be given. It can be taken away at any time. It can be given back again and then removed. And the kids need to understand that it's not a blanket consent that they have. It's one time only. And then they need to continue to engage. And silence is not consent either, which some of them don't grasp. So there is more work that needs to be done by our service, by our community groups and our partners, to assist in that education. I do think some of it stems from being cooped up at home during COVID, where they became so addicted to their phones and to social media and that instant gratification. We need to do more to engage the kids to get out and do things in the community, sports, culture, activities, you name it, and get off their phones.
When you were talking about visiting the kids, the students, Aaron, it really, the way that that he described what they're doing is really see it, name it, change it.
It really is, right? It's really reinforcing, see it, name it, change it. It's really engaging in the educational aspect and empowering kids and youth with information so they can make an informed choice. I think that those things are paramount in terms of prevention. I think we got to get upstream a little bit more in terms of the social media aspect and the engagement and the immediate gratification that you're talking about, Sean. I think we need to strategize a little bit between all of us, partner agencies as well as police services, to look at how do we get up the stream a bit before people start sharing images, before people allow themselves to engage in something that is maybe not consensual, but we're not thinking about consent before the act has happened. And then afterwards, we're thinking about the fact that that was hurtful and I didn't actually consent. I think we got to get ahead of that stream and upstream, and we can continue to use see it, name it, change it as a tool to help us with that.
That's a very valuable tool and a very valuable message. And I think that for families and for our community groups and for police officers, sometimes exploring the reason why the image was shared in the first place can be the root of it. I've experienced situations where I'm in a school giving a lecture on safe internet, consent, image sharing, and everything else. And literally the next day, I'm getting called back to that same school for a student that was sitting front row who shared intimate images with, like, unsolicited on their own. And they were part of the communication. So I think the reinforcement and the constant support and the messaging and finding their trusted adult can be helpful. It may circumvent the reason why they're initially sending that image in the first place. It's the need, it's the want to fit in, the urge to grow up too fast. It's all those things. But then it's the person that has the image, what they do with it afterwards as well, right?
Call it a hot take if you want, but I think that back in the 90s, the government failed to put in regulations when it came to the internet. Because if you look at what's possible over the internet today, back in the day, you never would have had, at least when I was in high school, you never would have had someone walking around in plain sight with pictures of somebody and saying, "Hey, look at this." But that's what the internet is allowing people to do. There are no regulations. There were no regulations put in place. And many people thought it was a fad. And really, you look at that history, and that has been a huge problem. And it's not just with, what we're talking about today. It's with child pornography. It's with the underground, the dark web, all the crime that goes on there. So here we are in an age where we now have AI coming in, and the trustworthy AI companies are making sure that images can't be manufactured. Some don't have that. So it's a whole new level of fear for some of these kids, Sean.
AI is a very powerful tool, can be used very well. And as education, training, you name it, I know that you use it script wise in certain situations. It's a great tool. In the wrong hands with the wrong intent, it can be very harmful. The education piece behind it all, everybody is scrambling to catch up. Police services, the courts, the community, kids, and a lot of times the kids are more knowledgeable than we are with these things because they're growing up with it. We're learning it as it's coming. So the growth and understanding for everybody is a challenge. Getting the court systems to catch up and have police officers as a result be able to catch up is going to be a challenge for a little while.
Yeah, I think there are issues around the Privacy Commission in terms of the sharing and the criminality of sharing images. I think that you're absolutely right that, youth during COVID especially, they became quite connected to their devices, and parents didn't have the same means of control or inserting those limits and boundaries. And now, post-COVID, things are readily available. And so the notion of saying, hey, I need your password. Hey, I want to talk about protecting yourself online. Hey, I want to check out some of the images you have on your phone because I'm concerned, becomes like a battle. It becomes like a
Absolutely.
battleground, right? And it really risked the elevated risk around the conflict between parent and child around those controls are quite problematic, right? I think like even the notion of location sharing, as somebody who reviews deaths for the province, I reviewed a death, and I thought to myself, wow, if only we could say as part of conditions, you need to put your location on, and we need to give your location to a trusted adult. That might help us be able to prevent some crimes and some incidents. But the fortitude with which we could try that, so we say, you got to give me your location. The person says yes as part of their conditions, and then they turn it off. They're going out to see the victim who they shouldn't be having contact with. They just turn it off. There's the notion of privacy again. There's so many complexities around the nuances of kind of the digital world, right? And the technology that's out there. And I think for us, I speak only for myself in terms of my age and my rank. There's no way I can catch up and possibly get in front of AI or get in front of half of these things, when I have a niece who calls ChatGPT chatty. It's like they're friends. It's like, oh, I just asked chatty. And then I'm like, whoa, what is that? So it's really all encompassing, and it's in every area and on every level.
And I find that really interesting, Aaron. I would like to say I have a good relationship with my ChatGPT as well, and I say please and thank you and all that, because one day when they're ruling the world, I want them to be able to go, hey, he was nice to us, and we'll see what happens there. But getting back to what you're talking about, like when it comes to regulations with social media and different things, yeah, there's a million different uses for the internet and the web and all that with kids, but we didn't regulate. I know I mentioned that earlier. So nobody really bats an eye at the fact that you can't drive a car till you're 16. You can't buy alcohol until you're 19, right? And this is where we sort of miss the boat, because you see what's happening in Australia, where they've banned social media for kids. Well, those kids just went and made new accounts that made them older. So they're all back on it there. Sean, I can't imagine. This must be, even in hindsight, regulating something this big and AI must be just baffling.
The weight of it is pretty extreme, to be honest. I find that I'll use pornography as an example, right? The readily access that they have to it is developing poor and misguided and misjudged opinions on what healthy sexual relationships are supposed to be about, what they're supposed to look like, how they're supposed to interact and react and engage with each other. And it's, I mean, they have it on their phones. It's accessible as soon as they can turn a phone on that has access to Wi-Fi. And that's a scary, scary thing. But for me, my kids are a little older. I was a little bit of a helicopter parent. And I think my kids turned out pretty well as a result of it. But when we give our kids too much freedom, too much rope, it might not be out of malice that they're getting engaged in these certain social media sites or what have you, but their entire core friend group, the entire school is already there. They're already on them, regardless of whether that social media site has an age requirement to it. There's no confirmation requirement. There's no proof that you have to put into play. So they have access to all these other things. Predators know it. Victims know it. I mean, it's a challenge. It's a struggle. I wish if there was a magic wand that could be waved, we could figure this out globally to try to keep more people safe.
Well, I think that that's why we do these episodes, right? So that we're trying to empower the community to hear those challenges for us as service providers on the ground, talking about how it contributes to violence, talking about how it escalates to violence, talking about the privacy issues, and hopefully having parents, youth, and others, maybe it will spark some sort of conversation at dinner, some sort of limits and boundaries that we have to put in place. I know that there are campaigns out talking about how to support. I think Rogers is doing a piece right on taking a break from social media and having limits and boundaries, and thinking about how we can do that at school. I know that the Ministry of Education is now providing e-courses, e-learning courses, so you can take your French course online. And so, I wonder sometimes if we've moved too far the other direction. But I think as it relates to violence and to relationships and to safety, we need to give people opportunity to talk about those nuances and being present in the school as a police service, as community groups, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Victim Services, Lanark County Interval House, being present at schools and engaging is one of the ways that we can try to get upstream. And we also need to figure out how to give some direction or support to parents and guardians around what they're trying to do in terms of some of the unhealthy, perhaps, choices that youth are making as a result of the influence that's happening online.
Agreed.
I think before we get to your final thoughts, Aaron, I just want to mention, like, we're completely well aware that we know in cases where images have been shared that it's resulted in suicide. We know that it's resulted in violence causing death, and we don't want to, not acknowledge that that happens. That's how serious this is. And Sean was talking a little bit about what pornography can do and how it can completely skew what people view as healthy sex. Aaron, I had a question for you. I know that there is this mentorship and coaching program that is underway. Is that one of those things that would be discussed in it, or something adjacent to that that would start those wheels turning?
I think that definitely coaching boys into men, which is the program you're speaking of, I think there are elements of that for coaches to be able to think about the messaging to the students around healthy sexuality, around touching, around consent, around their own, when we were kids, it was my body's nobody's body but mine. You run your own body, let me run mine. I think that we need to going back a little bit into having people understand the consent around their own bodies, and also the misogyny and the messages that sometimes come out that misrepresent, I think, a lot of young people. I think people say things and they don't really understand. When people say, I'm from the ghetto, I always ask them what that means, because there is not really a ghetto in Lanark County. Like, what are we talking about? We're not talking about inner city like ghettos. We're talking about their interpretation and their perception of it. And I think that's the other piece for me is language is really important. And I think CBIM really tries to empower coaches around language and how to have that dialogue with young men who are athletes and who maybe, would benefit from some permission and some validation to just be themselves and not try to be something else.
Sean, any final words for our audience?
You know what? I love the concept of the CBIM messaging, and if it could be adopted into other groups and other communication structures, pushing out that shared message could go a long way to educate, to kind of curb the growth of this problem and cut it off at the knees to try to educate and keep people safe. The thing that I hear a lot, and I've heard today as well, is communication and dialogue, for families, friends, parents, schools, teachers, trusted adults. The more open conversation and dialogue you can have, the better we are going to all be to be equipped to prevent these things from happening. And having people say, recognize earlier that, hey, I might be falling victim to something here. I should speak up, and I have a trusted adult that I can go to. So.
As we do each and every week, thank you, Sean. We will end this episode with Aaron Lee's final thoughts.
My final thoughts really are to youth and families and friends out there in our listening audience and in our community that violence permeates everywhere. And so it will start off as something that might seem harmless and might not cause you to think that it's violence, but it's a cycle. And it's a cycle that's rooted in power and control. So if you're feeling like you're not giving consent, you're not being heard, you're not being respected, and the boundaries are being pushed, it is important for you to see it, name it, change it. It is important for you to reach out to someone who you trust and have that conversation. Don't sit with it in silence, because your silence is not going to save you. Out that message, find your vulnerability and your courage, and share that so that we can make people safer in community.
Thank you very much, Aaron. You can catch every episode of Silence Broken at lanarkleadstoday.ca/silencebroken. A conversation that I had with Mayor Sean Panko, he had a great idea. You can now find links and phone numbers to resources if you or someone else is a victim of intimate partner violence and you would like to seek out help. You can find that right on that page again, lanarkleadstoday.ca/silencebroken. Sean Keogan, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you and anyone from the Smiths Falls Police Service.
Thank you both. Appreciate it.
And Aaron Lee, we'll do this again next week.
Indeed, we will.
I'm Bob Perreault, lanarkleadstoday.ca.